Okay, gentlemen, today I want to cover with you two of the most important questions in practical halakha regarding ksamim. If you remember, kesem is a woman who finds a stain on her garments or someone at, or somewhere else. And the halakha is that ksamim, that these stains, what we discussed previously, is that if they are the requisite size, which is, let's say, 19 millimeters, so then the woman is considered tmeya. However, the Gemara on Daf Nun Ches teaches us a statement of Rabbi Nechemya. The Rabbi Nechemya is of the opinion that a kesem on a item which is not susceptible to tumah is not tamei. A kesem on the davar she'ena makabel tumah is not tamei, and this makes it to the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Kuf Tzadi Se'if Yud. A kesem that's found on something that does not receive tumah, lo gazru alav, they did not make the decree that the kesem of the stain is tumah. And the case is the woman who inspects karka ulam, she is sitting on the ground and she finds a stain afterwards. So in that case, because the ground is not susceptible to tumah, the woman is also not going to be tmeya. That's the halacha that appears on Daf Nun Ches. Okay, all is grand, all is amazing. Now, obviously, to answer questions of this sort, you have to know a lot, in terms of what is considered susceptible to tumah. These are not halachos that most of us are fluent in, because we live in a world that tumah doesn't apply, but it still is relevant for our purposes. So the beginning of this conversation is that there is a rabbi, Rabbi Abraham ben David of past years, and the rabbi has a disagreement with Tosfos. Tosfos tells us on Daf. Tosfos tells us on Daf Nun Ches that if you have an item that is found on something that receives any sort of tumah at all, if you find the stain on something that is susceptible to tumas negayim, to tzaras, so then Tosfos says the woman is also tmeya. Right? Not only if you find the stain on something that receives normal tumah, which is hard enough, like Mesefes Kalim, but you also have to know Mesefes Negayim. According to Tosfos, if the stain is found on something that can receive Tumas Negayim, the woman is tmeya. And Tosfos proves this from a case of Mashtisa. The Gemara speaks about a woman. It is Nun Chesem and Aleph, Hahi Itza, Deshtakacha Doma B'mashtitza. She finds blood on this thing called a mashtisa. And she came to Reb Yanai. Reb Yanai said that she should try to do the act of weaving again. And if it ends up that in her act of weaving, it's likely that the blood came for her, then she is tamea. So Tosfos says, one second, a mashtisa, why is it tumah? The keli ha'orgin, the thing that's used for weaving, should not receive ordinary tumah. So Tosfos says, you're right, it doesn't receive tumah, but it does receive tumas negayim. Sara'as can apply to it. And Rashi similarly comments that the blood is found, in this case, on the shasi. If you remember, there's a song about this, no? About Yirap Reko Adam Dam. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? So if you find the blood on the shasi, I think, is the threads that are the warp, as opposed to the Erev, which are the threads that are the wolf. And The halacha is that there is tumas negutin. Sara'as applies to warp. So Tosis is understanding, Rashi is understanding, that she is tumea because there is tumas negutin. Now, the Ravid in the Sefer Ba'alei HaNefesh, the Ravid in Sharak Samim, Simon Beis, the Ravid says, you know what? This whole halacha does not apply. The Ravid proves from the case when the woman finds blood on a mashtisa, the Ravid says, you know what? The mashtisa is not susceptible to tum'a at all. The Ravid does not use tum'as nega'im. The Ravid says that this mashtisa is not at all susceptible to tum'a. And the fact that the Gemara says that this woman was tumea indicates that we disregard the halacha of Rabbi Nachanda. The halacha that the tumma of ksamin does not apply to something that is not susceptible to tumma. The Ravid says that that halacha is completely rejected. We do not accept that at all. And his proof is from the case of mashtisa. Now, the vast majority, or I shouldn't say the vast majority, everybody disagrees with the Ravid. The notes on the Ravid that are authored by the Baal HaMa'ar, the Baal HaMa'ar in his notes on the Ravid says, this is just not at all correct. And the Baal HaMa'ar says that no, a mashtisa does receive tuma, like Tosfos says. Apparently, for the Ravid, if you receive tumas negaim, that just doesn't count. Now, there's a lot to be said about this halacha. Why? What's the reason? Or let's just take a step back for a second. Even within the Ravid, there is some question. If you look in the Mosad HaRav Kook Ran on Daf Nun Ches, he quotes that the Ravid said that things which are not susceptible to Tuma are also not susceptible to Ksamen, like mainstream Judaism. So some change the text in the Ran. Some say that it should say Rambam, not Ravid. That's a big correction. This is all found in footnote 34 over there. Others say that the Ravid changed his mind. And they bring a proof because the Rambam quotes this halacha that a stain that is found on something that is not susceptible to tuma is tahar. And the right, this Rambam is in the ninth perek of Hilchos Isurei Bia, perek tes halacha zayin. The Rambam says that kesem hanimsa davar she'en l'makabel tuma is tahora, is tahar. And therefore, if you find a stain on stoneware, earthenware, etc., on the skin of a fish, anything that is not susceptible to tuma, yitahar. The Ravid does not argue. The Ravid's job is to argue on the Rambam. That's kind of why he was put on this planet, the assumption goes. And if the Ravid does not argue with the Rambam there in Perek Tes Halacha Zayin, that might show that the Ravid changed his mind. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a similar idea regarding the Ravid that we spoke about last week. If you remember, the Ravid said that we can only attribute a stain to a ma'acholas, right? The halacha is that the stain is really small. We assume it's not blood or it's not blood from the uterus. Rather, it is a squashed bug. The rabbit said that's only true if the stain that's found is red. But if the stain that's found is black, we can't possibly attribute it to a bug. Because apparently, when human blood dries, it becomes black. Right? Any of you who are nail biters, and by the way, that's a bad thing. You should not bite your nails. But if you bite your nails, often you notice that there's like yucky, blackish stuff where you bite your nails, no? That's because blood becomes black over time. Apparently, bug blood never becomes black. I've never tested this. I don't know. That's the assumption of the rabbit. Therefore, the rabbit says you cannot attribute a black stain to a mouthless. But the rabbit never makes that comment on the Rambam. So therefore, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that although the Ravid said it in this beautiful book on the Balei HaNefesh, but the fact that the Rambam mentions the halacha that we attribute stains to a ma'acholes, a small stain can be attributed to a bug, and the Rambam does not distinguish between black and red stains, that shows that the Ravid, who made such a distinction and does not disagree with the Rambam, the Ravid changed his mind. That's what Rav Moshe said. Now, gentlemen, here's my theory in life. And the reason I'm doing this, I know it's like a little bit detailed, because I think it's important. When I was in the Bernard Nebel Graduate School in ancient history, so I took courses with Professor Chaim Soloveitchik. Professor Soloveitchik is well known for having a massive disagreement with his brother-in-law, Professor Isidore Twersky. Rabbi Twersky's father was a professor in Harvard. Rabbi Twersky's father wrote a book about the Ravid. And Professor Soloveitchik took his brother-in-law and he put him in a paper shredder and he took him apart completely. One of Professor Soloveitchik's arguments is that his brother-in-law was making a huge mistake because his brother-in-law views the Ravid as being primarily someone who disagreed with the Rambam. But that's not true, Professor Soloveitchik said. The Ravid is referred to by the Meiri and by many Rishonim as the great explainer of the Gemara. The Meiri gives everyone like little titles. So he calls the Ravid Gedolei HaMefarshim. And that's because the Ravid wrote a commentary on all of Shas. That was the Ravid's magnum opus. The Ravid's notes on the Rambam happened because when the Ravid is an old man, the Ravid died in 1197. We know that the Rambam's book made it to Provence, made it to the French Riviera in the year 1192. The old man, the Ravid, gets his hands on the Rambam and he realizes that the entire world is beginning to paskin shailas based on taking out this book called the Rambam. And the Ravid says, that's just wrong. You shouldn't do that. And therefore, the Ravid jots down a couple of notes on the Rambam to show that the Rambam should not be accepted. But in no way, says Professor Soloveitchik, are the Ravid's notes on the Rambam a complete listing of all the places where the Ravid disagrees with the Rambam. The Ravid disagrees with the Rambam thousands of times, but he only has a couple of hundred comments on the Rambam. That shows, says Professor Soloveitchik, that you cannot argue that because something does not make it to the Rambam's glosses on the to the Ravid's glosses on the Rambam, you cannot possibly say that the Ravid changed his mind. And for our purposes over the last two or three days, this is relevant to two issues, to the black stain, and it's relevant now to the stain that is found on something that is not susceptible to tumah. The Ravid probably sticks to his guns. How come the Ravid doesn't write anything on the Rambam?
Because the Ravid didn't feel that he has to argue with every Rambam that he disagreed with. He just jots down a couple of notes. That's Professor Soloveitchik's argument. Whether or not Professor Soloveitchik is correct is a big topic of conversation. There used to be a journal that Yeshiva University published until like 3 months ago. The last issue came out 3 months ago called the Torah Umada Journal. No? It was like blue. And the Torah Umada Journal at one point had an article by a Rabbi Buchwald who disagreed with Professor Soloveitchik. This Rabbi Buchwald, by the way, is the Jew who wrote the notes on this Balei HaNefesh of the Ravid. This brown Ravid that I keep next to my seat in the Beis Medrash has the notes of Buchwald on it. So the fellow Buchwald is quite knowledgeable. Ariel Buchwald, his name is. He lives in Bnei Brak. Okay, and he disagreed with Professor Soloveitchik's article some 25 years ago after Professor Soloveitchik wrote this article. Those of you who have done any like academic Jewish history from the period of the Rishonim are probably familiar with the machlokas between the brothers-in-law, between Professor Tversky and Professor Soloveitchik. Do not mention this to Rabbi Tversky, by the way. If you're walking down the street, you see Rabbi Tversky, don't ask him, oh, what do you think about your uncle's, you know, article about the Ravid? Because, whatever. Just don't ask Rabbi Tversky about it. We'll say it like that. Okay, but as a matter of halacha, we assume that a stain that is found on something that is not mekabel tuma, that this stain is not a problem. Now, why is this true? But it doesn't seem logical. So the Piskei Tshuva over here quotes from the Note of Yehuda. That the Note of Yehuda gives a reason. He says, listen, ultimately, every stain is questionable whether it is dam nida. Maybe it's nida blood, maybe it's not nida blood. Maybe the blood came from the outside. The Note of Yehuda explains that the reason why Chazal say that stains are tamei, even though there's a suffix, right? We discussed this in the context of the Kesef Mishnah in our introduction, but the reason why the stain is presumed to be tamei is because, says the Note of Yehuda, you can't have a contradiction. If the garment upon which the stain is, if that garment is tamei, so it's silly to say that the woman is tahar. It doesn't make sense, right? Blood that comes from the woman, we have a psak that makar mekomo tamei. Uterine blood, the object itself, the chetza of the blood is tamei. If the blood is tamei, so that blood makes the garment upon which it falls tamei, and therefore it's not reasonable that the garment is tamei, but the woman herself would be tahor. So therefore Chazal have to say, you know what? When it falls on a garment that is tamei, the woman also becomes tamei. Hello, Mr. Slager. How are you?
But the suffix, why are we saying that by Hilchos Tara, the suffix is going to be Tamei, even though we would otherwise be saying that she's Tahar, for example, it's not like it doesn't add up to a gris, for example?
So it doesn't add up to a gris. Still, it should be Tamei, because in Tomei Tahara, the blood is going to be, the blood is going to be Tamei. That's the argument. Now, the Chavistas, the Pispei Tshuva over here in Os Yud Ches, says, look at the Note of Yehuda and look at the Chavistas. Right? He doesn't really tell you what anyone says. So we just tell you what the Note of Yehuda says. The Chavistas says, 1 second, Note of Yehuda, I don't know what you're talking about. If you're worried about a contradiction, then how could it be that the item is tamei, but the woman is tahar. So forget the item. The blood itself is tamei, even if it lands on an item that's tahar.
Right? Even if the item is not susceptible to tumah, if you touch the item, if the blood falls, let's say, on the book, right? And for whatever the reason, the book is made out of stone. The blood falls on the stone, okay? So the stone does not become tummy. But the blood is tummy. So if you're worried about a contradiction, you'd have a contradiction anyway. And moreover, there is a dispute in the Gemara whether we paskin makar makomo tame or makar nat makomo tame. Meaning, do I assume that uterine blood is automatically tame, and if you touch uterine blood, you become tame? That's a dispute. Nowhere in the Seches Nida do I see that this halacha of stains is only according to the opinion that makar makomo tame. Moreover, and I think this is the best question that the Chavos Das asks, the halacha that nida blood, even if you hold makar makomo tame, so if I touch the blood itself, I become tame. That's true only if you have a revius of blood. If you have 3 ounces of blood, most often you're not, I shouldn't say most often, you're never going to find 3 ounces of blood. Now, if you have 3 ounces of blood as a stain, like, you should see a doctor really quickly. Okay? It's a lot. Okay? 3 ounces is a kiddush cup. It's a small kiddush cup. It's a lot of blood. So therefore, the Chavos Das does not like this Nodi Yehuda. It is unclear what exactly the reason why blood that is found on something that is not susceptible to Tum'ah, why is that blood going to be, why is it that the woman is Tahar? When blood is found on something that is not susceptible to Tum'ah, the halacha is that the woman is not Tameh. You find a stain, she's not Tameh. Why would that be true? Again, we're talking about a stain, not a flow. Right? We're not talking about a woman who gets her period. We're talking about a woman who has staining at some other time. When it's a stain, we have a number of leniencies, including the case that you find the stain on something that is not susceptible to Tum'ah. And as a matter of halacha, we do not follow this ravid. As a matter of halacha, we assume that the woman is tahura when you find the stain on something that is not susceptible to Tum'ah. What the reason for that is not abundantly clear. The Nodi Yehuda's attempted reason is rejected by the Chavos Das. But nonetheless, because the halacha is accepted, we have to figure out which items are susceptible to Tum'ah and which items are not susceptible to Tum'ah.
But how does this idea of like Tum'ah's like Maga and Masa?
So Tum'ah's Maga and Masa. Oh, let's talk about that. That's a good one. Right? There are halachos in Tum'ah that if I am, there are halachos of Maga. Maga means I touch the tummy item. Masa means I don't touch the item directly. I'm wearing gloves, but I'm carrying the item. Now, if I find blood on something that is carried, right? In other words, if I find blood on the keli, and that keli is supported by something else, the item itself that I find the blood on, let's say, is plastic. Plastic is not susceptible to Tum'ah because it didn't exist at the time that Tum'ah was a reality. So plastic is not susceptible to Tum'ah. The Sidrei Tahara maintains that if you find blood on an item which is not susceptible to Tum'ah, but that item is being held by something which is susceptible to Tum'ah, in that case, the Sidrei Tahara maintains, the woman is Tumeah, because there is Tumas Masa. The Minchas Chinuch says, dude, what are you talking about? We follow, as a matter of halacha, the opinions that Ein Masa B'Kelim. If you have something that is supported, if you have something that's not susceptible to Tum'ah, but it's supported by a Keli. So we pass and there's no Tumas Masa. But there is Tumas Masa by humans, no? If I'm carrying something, right? If you go to A&P supermarket and you pick up a piece of treif meat and it's all wrapped up in cellophane, that's a nevela. Treif meat, right? It was not shechted properly, right? I'm not talking about, let's say, pig. I'm talking about a kosher species that wasn't shechted. So there's tumas masa on that. So even though I'm not touching the meat itself, I become tumay. So humans have tumas masa. Common case. A woman finds blood on toilet paper. What's the status of paper? Can paper become tumay? So there's a whole discussion over here in this Kisvei Tshuva Os Yud Ches. Does paper become tummy? Now, the type of paper they're talking about is not the paper we have. Their paper was rag paper. Rag paper comes from rags. A rag could be tummy. If the rag has a requisite size, let's say 3 fingers by 3 fingers, it can become tummy. So if you have paper that comes from rags, there's a discussion, does it become tummy or not? Or maybe it's considered a new item. But if the woman finds blood on toilet paper today, our toilet paper is presumed to certainly not be tummy. And the reason for that is because it is completely disposable, right? Most of us do not save toilet paper, correct? Good. Right? We're in agreement. We don't save toilet paper. If it's disposable, it does not receive the halachos of tumah. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, for example, that your disposable pans, if you purchase an item from a non-Jew, you have to immerse that item in the mikvah. That's called tevilas kelim. But if the item is not susceptible to tumah, you do not have to immerse it in the mikvah. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that your tinfoil pans, which you buy, because, right? Guys sometimes use tinfoil pans. Tinfoil pans are disposable. Therefore, they're not susceptible to tumah. Therefore, you don't have to put it in the mikvah. Anything that's disposable does not have to be put in the mikvah. When you purchase a non-Jew's item, usually you put it in the mikvah, disposable, you don't.
It's being reused.
Rav Moshe feels that even if it's reused, you don't have to immerse in the mikvah, even if you use it twice or three times. It's still a disposable thing. That's where Rav Moshe feels. Others say if you use it more than once, you should immerse it in the mikvah. That's like a detailed question. But for our toilet paper, right? For our toilet paper, you don't use it more than once. So you find a stain on toilet paper, certainly the toilet paper is not mekabel tumah. But let's say you're holding the piece of toilet paper and you find a stain there. Now, I am talking about a case that the woman is wiping herself relatively superficially. If she's wiping herself deeply, so there's a concern that you're a tmei'a min ha-Torah, when you insert something into the body, that we spoke about. But if you're just wiping yourself superficially and you find some blood on the toilet paper, according to the Sidrei Tahara, the woman is going to be tahor, the woman is going to be tamei. Because even though the toilet paper is not susceptible to tumah, but the toilet paper is supported by a human. And the human is susceptible to tumah. And therefore, there is this tumah of masa. There's the tumah of carrying something. And therefore, she should be tumea when she finds blood on toilet paper that is supported by herself. Deep breath. Hi.
The
Minchas Chinuch might say that you're tummy in that case also, because he only argues about masa bekelim, but masa by a human, he feels, is a problem, right? So, as a matter of halacha, no one holds this way. Even in the Badei HaShulchan, the Five O Kohen, is generally machmir in questions, and he's still alive today. He lives in Lakewood. It's a beautiful sefer, Ba'anei HaShulchan. In the Ba'anei HaShulchan, he writes, Ba'anei HaShulchan writes that the majority of poskim do not follow the Sidrei Tahara and the Minchas Chinuch. The majority of poskim say that Tumas Masa doesn't matter. I look at the object itself. Is the object itself susceptible to tum'ah or not? That seems to be the accepted halacha. Now, this, of course, brings us to materials today. Let's talk about polyester. How do you make polyester? So most of you are going to say, I never made polyester in my life. I buy polyester, right? Well, polyester comes from items. It comes from petroleum, mostly, and then it's processed somehow. It is not a natural fiber. Polyester, rayon, all of these things are fundamentally plastics. Something that is plastic is probably not susceptible to tumah at all, even if you fashion it into a garment. That's a point that Rav Moshe Feinstein makes in Chelak Gimel Simen Nun Gimel. In the Ba'anei HaShulchan, he quotes that there are those who disagree with Rav Moshe. Actually, he didn't quote Rav Moshe originally. He just quoted the Minchas Yitzvah. The Minchas Yitzvah was Dayan Weiss. He was the head of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim. In his previous life, actually, he was a Mizrahi Rav in Manchester. And then he, I don't know if he did tshuva, or however you want to say it, he was Chozer B'She'ilah, and he became the head of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim. So the Ba'anei HaShulchan in Se'if Katan Kuf Zayin writes that polyester is mekabel tuma because it's now a keli. In the notes that he wrote at the end of the book, after he published the first edition in 1980, so people wrote him questions, and then he made a few corrections in the back. And over here, it's not really a correction. He just writes, they showed me afterwards that Rav Moshe Feinstein feels that polyester is not susceptible to tuma. Why does this come up? This comes up often because, let's say, a woman finds a stain on pantyhose or on tights. So what's the halacha in that case? Is the woman tameya or not? So according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, polyester, not tame, it would seem that we're okay. However, it's not so simple because generally speaking, polyester doesn't really breathe well. And therefore, they put some cotton in the crotch area. Cotton can be tame, assuming the cotton is 3 fingers by 3 fingers, which it often is. Of course, to be tame, like we'll see in a few minutes, it has to be that it's white. But sometimes the cotton is actually white. So do we maintain that blood that's found on tight, on pantyhose or on tights is tame? So it seems to me, and this is something that I have not found in any sefer, but this just seems logical to me. Many pairs of pantyhose, you buy the pantyhose and the assumption is that you're going to wear it once or maybe twice and then you'll throw it out. They get runs in them, no? And then they're just very unsightly. So you don't wear it more than once, generally. Or if you wear it more than once, you wear it twice, then you throw it out. It's disposable! Anything that's disposable is not mekabel tuma. Again, this is Judaism according to me. It's all good teaching. Now I get to give my own ideas. But I think that there is real reason to assume that that pantyhose are not mekabel tuma at all. However, tights are different than pantyhose, no? Tights tend to be worn and reworn. They're more expensive. Pantyhose, usually you buy them in like a pack of 50, no? And that's what you do. And they're basically disposable. So the pantyhose, I'd say, is not makabel tuma, but the tights, you could argue, are makabel tuma. However, most often, if it's colored tights, the color bleeds through onto the cotton in the crotch area, and it's not really white. And based on the next halacha that we'll learn, it is therefore not going to be it will not create a situation where the woman is tamea. That's the way I understand these halachas. What other cases are there of things that are not makabel tuma? So I once got a question like this. A woman found blood on her mattress. The blood bled through the sheets and ended up on the mattress. Her sheets were colored, but her mattress, she contended, was white. That was the first question. Is the mattress white? Turned out the mattress wasn't really white. But let's say the mattress would be white. So then you get involved in the question in Hukos Tumah and Tahara, is a mattress susceptible to Tumah? It might depend on the type of coils inside the mattress. It might depend on the outer lining of the mattress. In our world, I think the outer lining is always some sort of like polyester or whatever. So the mattress is probably not susceptible to Tumah. That's what I understand.
But if the sheets themselves weren't the couple to move.
But the sheets in this case were colored. So if the sheets are colored, you're good to go. Now, the Rama writes that a Beis HaKisei is not makabel tuma. That if you find blood on the toilet, it's not makabel tuma. Now, what exactly toilets look like in the time of the Rama? I'm sure there is somebody who knows this, but that person is not me. Actually, I saw on Twitter last week that someone found a toilet from Temple Times. It was like a stone thing with like a hole in it. It was like a toilet from Temple Times. Is a toilet susceptible to Tumah? This is a question that comes up. The Rama writes that a toilet is not makabel Tumah. They ask the question, but if Tosos is right, that things which are susceptible to Tum'as Nega'im can become Tamei, can make the woman Tamei. So there is a halacha in Tum'as Nega'im called Nig'ei Batim, that you can get Sara'as on your house. Right? There are psukim in the Torah. You can get Sara'as on your house. You thought you didn't have to know Parshas Tazria. Right? You can get Tum'as on your house. If you can get Tumah in your house and your toilet is part of your house, so maybe you are going to be Tumea based on Nig'ei Batim. So some of the Achronim take this question seriously and they say, well, the halachos of Tumas Nega'im don't apply to all homes. It only applies to a house that is made of brick and mortar, real brick, real mortar. But if the supporting beams of the home are anything else than brick, then there is no tumah. That's what some assume. Others suggest that, and this is the approach I like, just because it's kind of cool. Others suggest that if you notice, the Rama is the one who says that the toilet is not makabel tumah. Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Mechaber, does not say that. And I would argue, perhaps, that the reason for this is as follows. The Torah tells us that Nig'ei Batim only applies in Eretz Yisrael. No? Natati Egat Sara'at B'Beit Eretz Achuzatchem. That Nig'ei Batim applies in Eretz Yisrael. The Mechaber lived in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, the Mechaber does not say that toilets are not susceptible to Tumah. But the Ramah lived in Krakow. In Krakow, there is no such thing as Nigei Batim. So the Shulchan Aruch was mostly written when Rabbi Yosef Karo made it to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yosef Karo, it's a good point. He moved from Turkey to Eretz Yisrael. But generally speaking, the assumption is that the Shulchan Aruch is his last written work. You can know which year the Shulchan Aruch was written. I think it was written in 1567. He writes in the Halachos of Shemitas Ksafim. This year is Shemitah. So he discusses whether you have to write a prizbol. And he writes, in this year, which is 1567, which is Shemitah, boom. Right, so I know which year the Shulchan Aruch is written. He died in 1576, no? The Ramah died in 1572. Rabbi Yosef Karo died in 1576. Hi, Tufia.
But that would be a big issue if you held that with an Eretz Yisrael nowadays, and they have one living there.
Right, so if it's an Eretz Yisrael nowadays, so potentially you have to deal with Nigei Batim, although, if we're honest, homes today are not built out of Afar and Avonim. Right? We don't build homes out of plain brick. Even though we build homes, most often you have some metal, which is the support for the home. But the halacha is that metal is not mekabel tumah once it's mechubar lekarka, once it's attached to the ground. It's not even mekabel tumas tzara'as. Again, the details over here, you have to know an awful lot to answer some of these questions. An awful lot of stuff that most of us don't know at all. Because we don't live, right? Think about how much more Torah we're going to have to know once the Beis HaMikdash is built. Right? Isn't it scary, considering how little we know today, how much more we're going to have to know? Right? It's really, really scary. We got to know this stuff, gentlemen. Okay, so these are some of...
Everyone passes on this
tomorrow. What?
Everyone passes on this tomorrow, by the way.
I don't know anyone who disagrees with this, Ramo.
Do the Sfaradim?
Again, do the Sfaradim hold of the Ramo? Generally speaking, unless you know there's a disagreement, the assumption is that they agree. The Sidre Tahara is the one who says this idea that maybe the Mechaber disagrees, and based on that, I like this approach of the difference between living in Eretz Yisrael and living in Chutz La'aretz. Okay, so these are some of the halachos of Zomer She'ino Mekabel Tum'ah. For tomorrow, I think as always, I tend to go slower than I thought. So for tomorrow, I want to talk about finding stains on items which are colored. I already gave out the sources for that today, and we will pick up from there tomorrow. Okay, questions, comments?
Okay, question. I didn't catch the reason why tights. You said tights are tahor. What?
You have a great Zoom background, but what were you saying, Brian?
Oh, it's my father's. What was the reason why tights are tahor?
So I thought tights are going to be tahor because most often the tights are colored and the coloring bleeds through onto the crotch area. So most often it's not really white. That's something that we'll talk about tomorrow. That's something that we'll discuss tomorrow. That if you find a stain on something colored, it's going to be okay. Okay. So these are some of the ideas. Okay, gentlemen, any other comments? Okay, have an excellent day.